community schools manager at Westlake Middle School, part of a group of educators on hunger strike protesting the Oakland Unified School District's proposal to close or merge over a dozen schools. This is day 8 of the strike. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Travel increases your chance of getting and spreading COVID-19. Take steps to protect yourself and others. Don't travel while sick. Avoid contact with anyone who is sick. Wear a mask to keep your nose and mouth covered when in public. Avoid close contact by staying at least 6 feet or about 2 arms' length from anyone who is not from your household. Wash your hands often or use hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth, and watch your health during and after travel. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. think that right. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel, joined by Kyle.
Over here, yeah.
In our new makeshift studio here. That signal means what? Raise your volume, or what? Why are you pointing to your ear? What am I supposed to do?
I was just casually pointing to my ear to start the conversation, because that is actually the most interesting way to have a good conversation. It's just begin somewhere unexpected.
How are the levels? Are they good? I'm not really seeing good levels.
Oh, you want to talk about levels?
Well, might as well, since we're getting technical.
That sounds good. Okay, yeah. I could hear more.
Uh-huh.
But that's, I mean, I feel like...
They look okay on the board. How do they look on our output device there? Well, I guess I have
I'm
to
not gonna lie. Yeah, it helps when you talk, yeah. But they could always use a little boost.
Well, okay, I'm pegged to the max here, so I can't get any louder.
Oh, it's one of those situations.
Yep, one of those. I'm sure everybody loves hearing how... you want me to turn the master up. Okay, so everything is louder now.
It's okay if it is.
Is that better?
I think it is.
All right. Oh, it's such a joy. Okay, so here we are, another fun-filled edition of Off the Wall, broadcasting from our remote location. You know, it's interesting, chaos, mayhem, it's all around us, everyone's going nuts. You know, the whole trucker thing up in Ottawa is really fascinating to see, because they kind of leapfrogged ahead of crazy, you know. We've been doing crazy in this country for the last couple of years, but Canada, when they decide they're going to participate, they go right to the front, and they've had truckers taking over the city of Ottawa and other places too, and just being jerks, like blowing their horns 24 hours a day and really annoying the people who live there, getting into fights with local people. Stealing, vandalizing, it really makes you want to listen to what they have to say. But when it comes down to it, what is it that they're upset about? They're upset about, well, first of all, most of them are vaccinated, so I'm not really sure what they're really that upset about. But they don't like what COVID has done. And wow, you know, it's not like Justin Trudeau brought you COVID. It's not like one political party or another is responsible for this. This is impatience that these people are expressing, impatience that we all feel, and they seem to just want us to put an end to it just by no longer paying attention to the fact that there is a virus out there that's deadly. Things are getting better, yeah, and that's great. Things are getting better, and it looks like we will be going back to normal sooner rather than later. But here's my worry. My worry is that we're going to start going back to normal. In fact, you're seeing it right now. You're seeing various states lifting mandates. And these right-wing Republican idiots and the truckers up in Canada, they're going to say, we did that. That's what they're going to do. They're going to say they backed down. And they're going to rewrite the narrative, completely forgetting about the right now nearly a million people in the United States who died from COVID and didn't have to. At least, you know, a significant percentage of those people did not have to die from COVID. And they're going to ignore all that and just say, yeah, it was the pressure we put on by honking our horns and by, you know, being aggressive and intimidating. We were able to put a stop to all these horrible mandates. No, what put a stop to mandates when we get to that stage, which I hope will be soon, what put a stop to that were people wearing masks, were people getting vaccinated, were people taking precautions. That's what put an end to it. And I'm worried that Democrats are going to be so timid, as they always are, that they're not going to acknowledge that. They're not going to say that. They're going to give that to the Republicans, too. Republicans are simply going to steal all the good ideas and plans. You know, we defeated COVID by yelling and screaming and keeping the Democrats from turning us into whatever they are trying to convince us that the Democrats are trying to turn society into. And just a whole host of other things that Democrats really should be standing up and shouting about.
I think did you hear that there's like fundraising dollars from down south, which is us.
Yes, us.
Going to the demonstration up there, and sort of hijacking it, along with a lot of other attitudes. And,
you can't hijack something that you're driving, because I think it was started in this country and it's being funded. In fact, I even saw a headline that said Republicans vow to launch an investigation into why the truckers in Canada aren't getting the money that was pledged. Why in God's name are Republicans in this country at all involved in what's going on north of the border? But, you know, they kind of confess to it right there.
And they're not the only ones that are interested. There are Canadian politicians who are really keenly interested in if this is even allowed and a violation. I know the fundraising platform that they were using was then switched to one that was a little bit more religious.
Yeah, I heard about that.
That's a no-touch thing.
It's great. You know, we have Canadian Dish, and we watch all different Canadian newscasts from different cities, national. And first of all, CTV, they have a news channel. CBC does as well, but CTV has a news channel. And I just find myself constantly watching that because, you know, unlike CNN, they don't have commercials all the time. They have, you know, a couple of commercials, but you can actually get news stories from them and not the same thing repeated over and over again. So it's fascinating to watch that, to see what politicians are saying. Last night on CPAC, which is not what you think it is, CPAC is the Canadian Public Affairs Channel. It's like their C-SPAN. They were having a debate in Parliament
about this, an emergency debate.
That got pretty contentious and kind of funny at times. But it's a real crisis up there. It's a real problem. You know, Canadians aren't used to this. We are, but it's a shame, and it's a scandal, I think, that it's being funded by politicians from down here. It's getting kind of in the realm of an attempted coup in Canada, because these people aren't stopping at being upset at I still don't know what it is they're upset at exactly because they have to get vaccinated. There's certain mandates still in effect. We all have to live with it, It seems to have to do with the United States. I'm not sure.
Border crossing. I think that's the angle, that there's some sort of...
into Canada or into the United States?
It's a burden in cross-border travel, and the truckers are sort of bearing the brunt of this.
Yeah, but
there's some mythology around it. I don't know what
Explain
it is.
To me how sitting in your truck for 2 weeks in a city isn't also a burden on you. I mean, you're not getting anything done, you're not delivering anything, and you're hurting everybody else. I'm not exactly sure how much of an inconvenience it is when they cross the borders, but, you know, you can always just drive within your own borders then, if that's a big issue for you.
For some reason, the solution is hot tubs and bouncy castles in front of Parliament. That's how they're doing their jobs.
It's not very convincing. But they've moved beyond just talking about vaccines. They're talking about overthrowing Trudeau. They're talking about basically doing the same thing that Trump tried to do here in this country, and bypassing the will of the people and installing their own state of one sort or another. And it's just insane to see this kind of thing happening up there. And I do hope the people in Canada are able to restore sanity in one way or another. This is something that is super disruptive if you live up there. And it's annoying the hell out of the people who are in places like Ottawa and other cities as well, but mostly Ottawa. And I see people who are mostly on the left saying that, yeah, you know, police should move in, but we don't want the police to move in because if they move in on these people, then they'll move in when it's us doing something else. And I think that's a mistake. I think when you say, yeah, you know, it's bad to use cops to enforce the law because they could be used to abuse us, that ensures that these people just get away with whatever it is they want to get away with, and you wind up losing. Now, the issue is it's a valid one. Obviously, you don't want to be abused in the future, but I think the time to fight that is in the future when it's a threat, when it's not a theoretical threat, not a hypothetical, you know, because you'll talk yourself out of anything having to do with stopping this nonsense. And right now, that seems like a valid approach. You know, they're blasting their horns around the clock. Imagine 4 in the morning hearing a truck horn outside your house. You know, that's not very pleasant.
Truck horn? They have train horns.
Well, they're trucks, though. They're not trains.
No, they have a train horn.
How'd they get a train horn?
Well, it runs on pneumatics. Like, it's an air compressor, and the trucks have air compressors.
But truck horns are loud anyway. Isn't that enough for them?
You know how we bought that foghorn? It's the same idea.
Not supposed to talk about that, but yeah, okay. If you hear a foghorn in the neighborhood, that's probably not us, so please.
Probably, definitely. But my point is, they have air systems, so mm-hmm. somebody brought one somewhere, and it's hooked up, I think, to the pneumatics. I could be wrong, but I think that's what's going on. Amidst many other truck horns. There's lots of horns. Noise.
Yeah, you know, that's just...
And that's not all. There's harassment. There's uh-huh. all kinds.
Now, you compare that to a Black Lives Matter protest, and you'll see it's night and day, you know. One is meant to annoy and harass. The other is meant to call out for justice and is very, very quiet and peaceful compared to that, despite what you have been told. And, you know, we can speak to this because we've been to a bunch of them. And there are instances in any gathering of people where some people do something stupid. That has happened so little of the time. And compared to this, It's pretty much zero. But this is really, it's hurting Canada in many, many ways. There were protests in Windsor. Here's a report from there. Most of the trucks in Windsor were covered with flags and posters denouncing vaccine mandates and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Speaking to the House of Commons in Ottawa last night, the Prime Minister said the protests, which began in opposition to COVID-19 restrictions, were harassing Ottawa residents in their own neighborhoods. They're trying to blockade our economy, our democracy, and our fellow citizens' daily lives. Trudeau said on Twitter that hundreds of Royal Canadian Mounted Police have been mobilized to support Ottawa police officers and promised the Canadian government and city would employ whatever resources are needed to get the situation under control. On Sunday, authorities in Ottawa declared a state of emergency. So it's getting real. It's getting real up there.
Absolutely, and there were a real high level of tolerance, and I think the support from the community that reached a threshold or sort of one end of a pendulum, it swung the other way where they're just making appeals, the police and the government side, and being less, I think, willing to allow all of this kind of activity to just go completely unbridled and just any direction. There is some sort of leadership from the group there. They're being taken seriously and meeting or making declarations of sorts and have some sort of legal arm and then are actively working around some of these things as the pressure is put on them to go home. I know peaceful and there's been a request from the city to have people who are of goodwill to go home, and they're trying to compel the people that are there and make them realize they are going to be issuing tickets and those tickets are being collected, I heard. I mean, it was fascinating just to see the coverage as we were talking about. And I urge people to take an interest, follow what's going on up there, and, realize some of the connected aspects to our own politics and state.
Yeah, it's really something. Because you see, if you look at the footage and what people have been videotaping themselves, you see swastikas, you see Confederate flags, you see all kinds of ugly hate symbols that these people have brought with them. This is well past a simple demonstration against COVID-19 restrictions, and it's really threatening the supply chain of various industries. This guy, the president of the Auto Parts Manufacturers Association, is named Flavio Volpe. It's a Canadian trade group. Said about $300 million in goods across the bridge, I believe into Detroit, every day, with about $100 million of that related to the auto industry. Most assembly plants have enough parts for only one day's production, raising the possibility of layoffs if there is a prolonged border disruption. The idea that a group is hiding under the profession of trucking, though unsupported by trucking associations, to disrupt this is brain dead. And then there's the issue of healthcare workers. Healthcare workers are being told to hide the fact that they're healthcare workers because they are under threat. This is literally happening. They are under threat by white supremacists, by all kinds of intimidating people. And these are the folks who are saving lives. And they're being told they have to keep a low profile. It's sick. It is so terrible. And it really has nothing to do with COVID-19. This is something far deeper than that. And we better pay close attention because it's a threat. It's a first cousin of January 6th, I believe.
Yeah, open-ended. And, you know, be careful when you have these kinds of actions that when there's sort of a rudderless or no direction and people are throwing things under vague banners and umbrellas of freedom and so forth. Well, what are their activities actually leading to, and how much is going on under the auspices of that that doesn't really comport with what they're saying or what anybody who's in a part of a movement or participating in an action would agree is fair and how to behave.
Right. And this is also going to be a testing ground for similar type actions here, even though a lot of it is being controlled from here. Expect to see this sort of thing. Expect to see this sort of intimidation, see how much people can get away with and how much they can use force to get their way.
And that frenzy of, like, getting people whipped up in such a fervor. That was what happened in January of that. And this is the same feeling, like you said. It's just wouldn't take much for something to go the wrong way. And you have to wonder, especially when these things are about taking apart or going to the places, the seats of government, which are arguably great places to, you know, make your voice heard, but they're attempting to tear these things apart, the very thing that you actually would need to implement manifest, like make real some of your requests into legislation. You need the machinery. You need the representatives, or you should use it. This imperative to just sort of tear it apart is a real clear destabilization from you know, all kinds of interests, varied interests, but it is certainly not something that you can count on as a sort of stable form of government.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's much worse. There's so many reports there.
Yeah. I wish if I could get Canadian TV. But you can probably see excerpts on YouTube and various other places.
A lot of
streaming. I'm sure you can keep up to date. It's worth keeping up.
People are posting about it really prolifically. So just follow along with that. And, yeah.
Yeah, and listen to As It Happens. That's the CBC Daily program that's on the radio, which I know you can get. It's on some stations here. Some NPR stations carry it. And
but they're following the money. This is something that is going to be investigated. And, a lot of the sort of statements that have been made from politicians and leadership here, it's being looked at. And it's a bit too perfect. I don't know. It's, mm-hmm. It seems to be a lot of coziness there.
Hey, get this. I just read this. Senator Mitch McConnell, you know him, right?
I've heard of him.
Yeah. He is the minority leader, which is funny to say. And hopefully he stays that way, too. He pushed back hard today on the Republican Party's censure of Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and its characterization of January 6th as, quote, legitimate political discourse, unquote. That was brilliant. Calling January 6th legitimate political discourse. And he said the riot was a violent insurrection. And those remarks from McConnell added to a small but forceful chorus of GOP lawmakers who have decried the action that the Republican National Committee took on Friday when it officially rebuked Ms. Cheney and Mr. Kinzinger for participating in the House investigation of the January 6th attack, accusing them of persecution of ordinary citizens engaged in legitimate political discourse. If those are ordinary citizens engaged in legitimate political discourse, then I guess World War II was just a big political convention. I don't know how anyone can reach that conclusion, but the almost entire Republican Party did. And people, you know, I can't believe I'm agreeing with people like Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell. They're actually saying what's right, what's true. You know, I'm sure I won't agree with anything they say beyond this, but it's something that should be acknowledged. And I'm sure they'll pay the price for it as well. But, you know, maybe that'll wake up other people. We're going down some very, very dark passageways here. And, wow, that is something. But imagine, you know, just because they're on that committee, they're being censured by their own party. And it's not like the committee wasn't offered to Republicans. I believe Nancy Pelosi was originally saying 50-50, Republicans, Democrats. They turned that down. So then she picked her own people and picked Republicans that were willing to do this. So you got nothing to complain about. You turned it down. You turned down what would have been a completely fair and equal representation.
And probably thorough.
Well, I don't know. There would have been a lot of... can you imagine Jim Jordan? I think he was one of the people that was invited. They basically would have turned it into a circus.
I think he invited himself.
Did he? I don't know. But let's hope they get to the bottom of this. Let's hope that see some conclusions and some serious penalties for what happened there, because that was a grievous injury to our nation.
And maybe some Republicans that look at those leaders in their minority that that maybe have a change of heart and say, yeah, this is actually the right way to look at this. Do I have a lot of optimism about that? I don't know. It doesn't seem to be where they're headed, but it is important if we're to get past any of this and be better, like we're working in a more unified way on a lot of projects. You need good, competent Republicans somewhere in there, and they should maybe stop writing themselves out of a worthwhile future.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I was getting out of the story here. Hey, do you know there's only, I believe this is the right number, 329 days until Lee Zeldin is no longer in power here?
Well, I heard it was something like that.
Out of a job, because he will not be reelected as representative of the 1st Congressional District in New York State.
Fascinating.
Yeah, well, he won't be reelected because he's not running. Okay, but you know, I'm going to take whatever I can get. And the fact that he is... he's running this comical campaign for governor. It's funny because no matter what Hochul does now, he basically jumps on, you know, whatever she says or does. But it's not taking, you know. it's such a lame attempt at challenging statements or positions or actions that make sense, you know. And It's not going to end well for him, obviously. And with the redistricting that we talked about last week, the 1st Congressional District is now going to be a Democratic stronghold. Yeah, how do you like that? And it's really something to see Republicans going berserk over this, when in actuality it's just basically doing the same thing that Republicans have been doing for ever, for a long, long time. But Here's the thing that a lot of people don't seem to realize. It's not a move to cement power or to be undemocratic. It's basically fixing what the Republicans broke in the past. This whole gerrymandering that takes place every 10 years... it had been run by the Republicans before, and they had made districts so completely unfair and imbalanced. And what Democrats are doing now is putting them back to the way they were before that happened. And Republicans are saying that that is somehow unfair and throwing everything into a tizzy. No, it's putting it back the way it was. Maybe in another 10 years they'll do that, if gerrymandering is still a thing. But right now, it's not giving them an unfair advantage. It's basically putting it back to the way it was when it was a lot fairer than it is now. And when you make things fair, Republicans tend to lose. It's just the way it is. I don't know. It's kind of inspiring to see this happen. Senator Ted Tedisco, this is a state senator, Republican of Schenectady, said they basically turned my district upside down. Yeah, sorry to hear that, but that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
If it gets people upset enough that they want to reform or fix the way these are drawn, the way the maps look, I think that alone is a reason to have turnabout like this, use a little bit of the same tactics. Because then it would be fixed, as well as this having been reverted, as you said.
Yeah. What they're doing, this is a Democratic consultant saying, what they're doing with the lines is reducing the chance they'll ever go back in time that the Republicans will ever regain control. Well, that's what happens when you have less people voting for you than for the other side. You don't have control. And what the Republicans have been doing, and, you know, good for them. They played the game well. They were using the rules to gain an unfair advantage. But now there's a reaction to that. And we're seeing the results. Yeah, signed into law. So it's happening. It's happening.
I heard that Jerry Nadler's district had some changes made to it, and that they were saying it had been gerrymandered.
Oh, wow. With a J.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's pretty funny.
That's kind of cool. Hey, all the snow's gone.
It is.
I'm upset by that.
It's like an old snow cone out there.
It's not, you know, a week ago we were celebrating a blizzard that had landed only a few days earlier, and now it's all gone. I mean, that's just, you know, when you have that much snow, it should stay around for at least a month, not be gone in a week. But that's the way that cookie crumbled, I guess.
There could be some more weather. I heard there was a solar storm.
That doesn't help.
Not that the Borealis would come visit.
That does nothing for me if we have a solar storm, unless that can somehow produce snow.
And, that space telescope. Did you ever find out?
Yeah.
Did they take a picture of something yet? I heard they turned it on.
They got a signal from some alien outpost out in Alpha Centauri.
Really?
Just to you know, configure. I've been doing this for years.
Like a hardware handshake?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, parameters are all in order.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think that went well. I don't think there's any actual recordings of it. But by summer, by June, by July, it'll start sending us really cool pictures. That's my understanding.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right, moving overseas, look at this headline. It seems to me that the mass media really, really likes the idea of war. I've just been noticing that.
Yeah, it's glaring. It's a little too much.
I want to read you this headline from CNN today. Russia pours cold water on Ukraine crisis de-escalation as Macron meets with Zelensky. I'm not sure who Zelensky is.
He's the president of Ukraine.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. It didn't sound like a Ukrainian name.
Zelensky.
All right. Macron went over to Moscow to talk to Putin. I guess he's not at the Olympics anymore. We saw him at the Olympics. He looked lonely, didn't he? He looked old, and he looked lonely and cold, too. He was just standing there in the stands. Nobody was near him. And he stood up when the Russian team went out. Am I allowed to call them the Russian team? They're the Russian Olympic Committee, right? Because they cheated and they can't be called Russian.
It's IROC.
It's stupid.
It's IROC.
Just ROC, I thought. ROC.
I thought it was
Republic of China when they came out.
IROC.
Anyway.
Whatever.
But the headline, Russia pours cold water on Ukraine crisis de-escalation as Macron meets with Zelensky. Basically, Macron went over to Moscow, talked to Putin for a while. I think that's a good thing that, you know, he's talking, that people are talking to each other. I think that's important.
Especially when we're talking to the German chancellor and, mm-hmm. and doing all these other sort of reassuring and so forth at the same time, you know, they're going to need a little attention. And
it's just, the whole thing is really stupid, and it's really in danger of blowing out of proportion. But let me read you the first couple of paragraphs of this.
Yes,
as French President Emmanuel Macron visited his Ukrainian counterpart, Vladimir Zelensky, in Kiev. I'm not supposed to say that anymore. You're supposed to say it a different way now? Kiev? You're supposed to say Kiev?
Kiev.
I'm going to say Kiev, because that's how I was told to say it. And I understand you say Peking in French, so, you know, why are we saying Beijing? You know, I grew up with Peking, and they still say it in France. So I'm going to say Kiev. Let the letters come in. I don't care. Anyway, he met with him today for diplomatic talks in the country's crisis with Russia. I'm not sure what kind of diplomatic talks you have to have with Ukraine if you agree with them, but Moscow indicated there were points of convergence laid out by Macron during his five-hour meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin a day earlier, which, you know, you would expect. But the Kremlin has poured cold water on reports that the two leaders had agreed to de-escalate the tense standoff on Ukraine's border, where tens of thousands of Russian forces have massed in recent months, drawing warnings from Western officials of an impending invasion. The Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, today would not confirm any tangible steps toward a resolution, casting a cloud over the French president's shuttle diplomacy as he addressed the media in a joint press conference alongside Zelensky. Okay, you know, I'm not really seeing... All they did was not say that there was tremendous progress, would not confirm any tangible steps. Doesn't mean there weren't steps, doesn't mean there weren't agreements. You know, it doesn't mean we're in a slightly better position today than we were yesterday. But the Western media, the mass media in general, just seems so intent on pushing the conflict without thinking it through. Like, how much damage would such a conflict actually bring to all of us, not just people in Ukraine? And maybe we need to think this through in less strident tones. You know, for instance, okay, maybe this is controversial to say this, but I don't think there's any reason Ukraine has to be part of NATO. I don't think we need to say, oh, but they can if they want to. No. Look, Russia has been fairly clear about this. They are nervous about having a country bordering them that's part of a military alliance that is opposed to them. Okay? Now, I see the irony. I see the irony of Putin standing up there and saying, why does NATO still exist when the Soviet Union stopped existing, and then doing something to underline why NATO should exist because Russia is still acting like the Soviet Union. I get that. That's he hasn't thought that through. But if you look at the border, it's pretty much true that there are no countries bordering Russia that are part of NATO, except for Latvia and Estonia. And I guess they just kind of slipped through, because that's, you know, that's a big deal. And I'll tell you, when I was in Latvia and Estonia, there's a lot of anti-Russian sentiment there. And, you know, for good reason, there is a lot of oppression that went on. If you go from Kaliningrad to Russia, the main part of Russia, Russia, at least at the time I was there, Russians were being required to have passports to travel from one part of their country to another because they passed over Latvia or Estonia or Lithuania. Does not border Russia directly, I don't believe. Anyway, so those two countries are part of NATO, and they do border Russia. And I imagine Russia's not very happy with that. But it happened, and there's no turning back from that. And I'm not seeing Russia saying that they're going to invade those countries. But here's an interesting fact. Where do you think Finland and Sweden stand on all this? I mean, they're NATO members, right? Wrong. They're not NATO members. Finland borders Russia, and they're not a NATO member. They have no plans to be a NATO member, and everything is just fine. There's no reason for this. And Sweden, They just don't want to be NATO members. And that's worked. They have alliances, they work with them, but they're not members. And the same thing could easily be the case in Ukraine. Now, there are various give and take things that can be, you know, I talked about Crimea, how Crimea is overwhelmingly Russian, how it was part of the Russian Soviet Republic for many, many years, and was just basically signed over to the Ukrainian Soviet Republic by Khrushchev for no particular reason. Let Putin have Crimea. I know it's strategically crucial, but yeah, more Russians there, less Ukrainians. And keep that. We'll recognize it, but that's it. No more. And Ukraine doesn't become part of NATO. No need to. I mean, isn't that better than just doing what the media is pushing right now? And, you know, what we're seeing every single day, where it's one step closer to all-out war. I mean, we're talking big war, not even like Yugoslavia war, like, you know, nukes and things like that. Not everyone is talking that way, but some people are. Some people are saying this could escalate quite quickly. U.S. is sending troops to Eastern Europe. I mean, come on. Even people in Ukraine aren't as worried as people outside. And for God's sake, why is the United States even involved? You know, we should be involved as a member of NATO, but we shouldn't be leading the charge. I think, you know, countries like Germany and Poland and places that are nearby, they should be the ones saying, this is what we'd like you to do. And I'm just not seeing that. But here's the thing that makes me a little uneasy. This is a story that I just saw right before showtime. Trump voters now twice as likely as Biden voters to say Russia-Ukraine conflict is none of America's business. And that, to me, is one of the strongest arguments against what I'm saying right now is the fact that I might agree with Trump voters. But there might be an element of truth to that. There might be an actual element of, well, for different reasons. They honestly don't care. They don't want to be involved in other countries. And, you know, right-wing fascism, not necessarily a bad thing in their book. But I think if you just look at the logic, if you look at the history, there are ways of dealing with this that are so much better than what we've been doing. I don't know. Your thoughts, Kyle. I've been hogging the microphone here.
Well, I'm just super lucky that I don't have to figure this all out. And that there are competent people in the State Department and that are talking diplomatically around the world and listening. I think that's what's been lost. I agree with you. The sensationalizing through the media, it's been going on for weeks and months now, even though it's been sort of prompted by stories from the Defense Department that have been like slow trickles about different things that are happening around the world. And I think that's been partly to sort of head off surprises. So, but yeah, it's not really authentic, I think, for pundits and people to be like, I mean, really seriously talking about a run-up to a really large-scale conflict. I think the emphasis remains and should be de-escalation. What are the ways that this isn't going sideways? How are we listening from afar? We are proverbially that armchair participant in being so far removed from this area. And there's a lot of reasons for our listening and involvement and support in one way or another. But, it's not for us to make all the decisions on. And we've plenty of recent evidence of how foolish that can end up.
Yeah. I'd like for us to be a little bit more detached, but at the same time concerned. Because obviously if Putin invades Ukraine, which I honestly don't think that is the intention right now. I think this is a show of force. This is something to get the conversation going, which it has. But I think invading that country would be a disaster. And, yeah, we're usually pretty good around here at calling the disasters. Said the same thing about Iraq. Said the same thing about Iraq the first time. Kuwait, all pretty much every misadventure. Afghanistan for both the Soviets and the United States. They never seem to learn the lesson. Maybe this time they have. Maybe this time Putin will back down. But he has to back down in a way where he feels like he's gotten something. And if you give him nothing, then you're backing him into the corner, and that's not wise. It might feel good, but it's not very smart. Now, Biden's national security team says a Russian disinformation campaign is already well underway. This is interesting to me. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby recently outlined what he described as a Russian plan to make a phony video that could be used as a pretext for a Russian invasion. As part of this fake attack, we believe that Russia would produce a very graphic propaganda video which would include corpses and actors that would be depicting mourners. All right, you know, it sounds absurd, but where are you getting this from? It's enough to really get us riled up and say, oh, how dare they, but they haven't done it. So where do you find out that they're planning on making a fake video that, what exactly would be happening here? Ukraine would be attacking Russia? Would they really do that? Okay, so that's what they're going to try and sell us. Boy, they're stupid, except they haven't done it. We're saying they're going to do it. You know, it's like whenever somebody's Twitter account or web page is hacked, and they say, well, the Chinese did that, or the North Koreans did. How do you know? Yeah, this is who you would like to blame. But where's your evidence? They rarely provide you with the evidence. And I want to see that. I want to see, and I know they listen. I know they listen because, you know, how I was complaining on it was either this show or the other one, about the Washington football team, how they needed to change their name. That was 2 weeks ago. They changed their name. They finally got it. Commanders. I think Red Hawks would have been better. Whatever. They don't do what I say, but they do listen. Anyway, John Kirby, I know you're listening, Pentagon spokesman. Where's the evidence? Show us what, is there kind of some kind of, you know, a call for the script, you know, to film and all that kind of stuff? Let me know. Because then we can judge it.
An open casting call?
Yeah.
That's what you mean?
Yeah, open casting. Well, I imagine they've already cast the actors, but what do they call that when, you know, it's basically a schedule of when you're supposed to show up and where? Yeah, you know, movie people know what it's called.
Cattle call?
No, that's not. That's an insult.
Yeah, I feel like that's not the kind of extra you want to be.
Anyway, so these things are being interpreted as fact when it's simply saying, this is what they could do. They might do this. Oh, my God, they're going to do that. I can't believe it. We have to do something in retaliation for that act they haven't done.
It's a really crazy time to try to get draw definitive conclusions, because there's all this attribution and deniability and attribution and deniability that's going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And narratives being steered one direction, taken over and repackaged and going in another direction. I mean, what would it look like if we were bluffing about going in and confronting Russia along the border? It would feel a lot like this, right? I mean,
what if we made the video?
Yeah, maybe those are our mourners.
We make the video and we say the Russians made the video.
And that has...
And we even do it on CCAM. That's their video standard.
Of course, CCAM. Yeah. No, that's perfect.
That way they know it's true.
Right. Then they can blame the Americans for making the video of the fake attack that was a pretense for them to attack. Oh, this is so stupid. Do you have any other stories?
Oh, yeah. But this is so entertaining. Okay. So, our friends over at the Shinnecock Nation out east, about a dozen of them and their supporters, protested yesterday to demand that Southampton Town preserve a parcel under development, which they say is sacred and may contain the remains of their ancestors. Can you believe this is still a thing that that is happening out in Southampton, that they keep desecrating? Members of a tribal group, the Shinnecock Graves Protection Warrior Society, said they'd been given assurances that the site, which is on Montauk Highway, across from a recently preserved site called Sugarloaf Hill, would be protected from development. Well, guess what? Another lie. Yeah. We're furious, said Becky Genia, a longtime tribal advocate for Graves Protection. She said the tribe was given no notice when a developer began clearing the parcel on the north side of the highway before last week's snowstorm. Members held signs urging the town to stop selling cemeteries and defend the sacred, and threatening development of another McMansion on Indian graves over my dead body. We were told it was purchased and protected, Genia said. We would never have left in 2020 if development could still occur, she said, referring to past protests at that site. Genia was referring to the 2020 protests that shut down parts of Montauk Highway. We're just asking the town to utilize the Community Preservation Fund as quickly as possible to preserve what's left, not only for Shinnecock, but for all of us, the groundwater, the aquifers. That's according to Tila Landbag-Troge, a lawyer and member of the Shinnecock Graves Protection Group. Southampton Town Supervisor Jay Schneiderman noted the town has preserved numerous sacred sites with its Community Preservation Fund, including several parcels around the site where the tribe members protested Monday. But he said the owner of one particular site has not agreed to sell. We never had a willing seller, he said. We're always willing to talk if the property owner is interested in selling it, particularly with these culturally sensitive lots, but there has to be a willing seller. Stolen land, though. I mean, that's kind of a whatever. In any case, Schneiderman said the developer cannot begin digging a foundation on the site without an archaeological review from the town, per a graves protection law approved by the town. There also are a series of steps to make sure potential graves are not disturbed once a developer does get approval. The site had been cleared of trees to provide access, but no foundation had been dug. Genia said the laws setting requirements and guidelines for those who can excavate are not enough, and she said the tribe has heard complaints that the archaeologist isn't routinely consulted on all culturally sensitive sites. While she spoke, a woman in a black Mercedes pulled up and told her the tribe already won preservation of Sugarloaf Hill, adding, "Why do you need this too?" Yeah, well, what is it with you native people? You know, you won back a tiny fraction of the land that was stolen from you, and you want more? Wow. The nerve. The chutzpah.
I find the whole concept of land ownership insane.
Well, there's that.
It's just like, okay, so there's land, and then so somebody buys it. So they've bought it. But then, so it's been paid. That's how much it costs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then they like, you know, go away, or they pass it on to some people or whatnot. It changes hands again, and maybe the price goes up, but it's worth basically double because it was already paid for once. Why does it's like it's throughout the course of time, that land has been paid for over and over and over and over and over again. It's just changing hands. It's not even like a whole value in this. It's stupid. How does that even? How does she scream at people about something that's messed up in the first place? And that, yeah, it was imposed upon the ancestors of people.
Black Mercedes.
Black.
I think that says
Benz.
It all.
Yeah.
Genia said some in the town was so full of hate, they say things like that out of pure hate. Others, she said, support the group's mission because they're tired of overdevelopment, which is a valid reason, but the real reason is that this is the right thing to support. She said the tribe would consider legal options to oppose the development, but hope to avoid them. The developers in the town shouldn't be putting us through this. They absolutely know this lot was preserved and protected in perpetuity. That's what they said. They know we have limited resources. We're with you all the way, and I hope Long Island stands up for this. It's
really cool that they have a group already, and they need this support, because the way this usually goes, I think, I don't know much about this, but when things are turned into sort of a land trust, or there's some kind of foundation, a lot of the gardens, famous New York gardens, operate this way, and they have a source of revenue in that they have visitors coming and visiting the venue and paying some kind of fee that goes into the trust that perpetuates the land not having to be sold again. That's not something that necessarily everyone can really access, especially when you've been sort of victimized and historically and just to claim something for your family, for your community, for your religious closure and historic posterity, you don't necessarily have the same options to create these kinds of investment vehicles that last over time. Mm-hmm. You have to navigate how this changes hands and kind of ad hoc set it up yourself. There's not a lot of support for this stuff, and it's just totally backwards that they're fighting for something. It should be the other way around.
You have to pay close attention to this, or you'll get screwed. You cannot trust these agreements. And just another indication of that. And multiply that all around the country. And just, you know, around the island, there's two tribes left. You know, every community, it seems, is named after a tribe that is no longer around. So Setauket being one example. And Patchogue and Conequah, they're everywhere. We have to show support. We have to do the right thing. Hey, just in closing, though, we traveled through Oklahoma. And we're visiting a couple of native communities, and we only have a second to talk about this. But as a result of doing that, we looked into some research. We looked into some history of those towns, discovered that there was an actual TV series called Reservation Dogs that was filmed there. And we just watched that entire series, could not put it down. It is the most amazing show about native communities in this country. I cannot recommend it enough. Track it down, however, it's on Hulu, I think, on FX, I don't know which one it's on, but track it down, Reservation Dogs, only 8 episodes, but it's been renewed for another season, and I think it'll give you some understanding and some hope, and hopefully a lot of inspiration as well.
I can't say enough about it. The vision that the main protagonist is always speaking to is hilarious.
Oh,
it's just so funny, because it's, I think, a really approachable concept of what a young person how they would see a vision in their lives and what that means in their growth and how they talk about it. And I just, I really appreciate it. I saw some shots where we had parked, like right in the main town. It recognized a lot.
We'll have to talk about this in future weeks because we're out of time right now. I do want to go out though. I'm still encoding vinyl. I'm up to, and I got to this band called Insanity Defense, which had WUSB's own Ron Phillips in it. And this album, I'm holding it up right now, it's called Pilgrim State. It's a picture of Pilgrim State, the mental institution, one of those huge brick buildings that's really, really scary to come upon in the middle of the night. There's a song on here called Witch Hunt. It's all about, do you remember those good old days when there was a satanic worshiping cult in Northport? Well, that's what this song is all about. Enjoy. OTW at 2600.com.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Stay tuned for Finn.
Thank you. women, kids. Finn with you until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook on Finn's Revolution. Hey, I don't know if the Northport board or whatever they are might pick that last tune as a theme song. That's not a bad idea to present, though. Not a bad idea. We're going to wander through everything tonight. Hold on.